It's happy birthday.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike invites you to our Information Please party. We play a simple game. You furnish the questions, and our experts try to answer them. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please, as always, goes on in its unpremeditated way without benefit of any rehearsal. And tonight, the board of experts consists of the musical, writing, actor, Oscar Levant, the sports expert and author of the American sporting scene, John Kieran, and the originator of the Conning Tower, Franklin P. Adams. And our guest of honor is the distinguished actress and author, Miss Cornelia Otis Skinner, who's at present starring in Somerset Maugham's and Guy Bolton's play, Theater. Now remember, for each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We're off with a question coming to us from Richard Rostron of Somerville, New Jersey. Get 3 out of 4 on this one. What person was or is still known as the following? Bronco, that's B-R-O-N-K-O. Mr. Levant.
Bronco Nagurski.
That's right. Who is he?
He was a fullback for the Chicago Bears and became a wrestler. And I don't know what he's doing now. I don't think he knows what I'm doing.
Mr. Kieran, do you know what Mr. Kieran, what
no,
Mr.
Levant's
doing?
No, I don't know what became of him. He was a very good football player.
He was. He's an ex-professional football player, and probably we'll hear somehow tomorrow what he's doing now. That's Bronco Nagurski. Now, how about Light Horse? Who was known as Light Horse? Mr. Adams.
Light Horse Harry Lee.
Yes, who was he, Mr. Adams?
He was general or a colonel in the Revolution.
Yes, I guess he was a general. And he had another distinction.
He was one of the ancestors of Robert E. Lee.
Yes, I think he was his father, unless I'm greatly mistaken. Grandfather, was it?
Better not be mistaken.
No, I think he was either the father or the grandfather of Robert E. Lee, a Revolutionary War hero. Mr. Levant?
All football players who were rather fleet-footed and who had the name of Harry always were Light Horse Harry Wilson, who was at Army. Was wonderful.
That's right. Football. They borrow the epithet. Yeah. Now, here's another. Mule. Who's known or was known as Mule? Mr. Kieran.
Well, one is Mule Haas, a major league outfielder for a great many years.
Yes, formerly of the Athletics, I guess, wasn't
Athletics
it?
And the White Sox.
Are there other mules?
Yeah. Mule
at
Watson.
Least 19 others?
Mule Watson was a pitcher.
Who?
Mule Watson.
Mule Watson? Why'd they call him that? Mule. Well, don't go into it. did you have any others in mind, Mr. Kieran?
No.
Mr. Adams?
There was a brother of Old Hoss Hoey, of Evans and Hoey, who was known as Young Mule.
Okay. Okay. And my final epithet here is Flanders Mare, who was known as Mr. Skinner.
Anne of Cleves.
Anne of Cleves. Who called her that?
Well, the king, after he saw her. She was so ugly.
And is it true that she was as ugly as
yes,
all that, Mr. Skinner?
Yes, she was a nightmare, I guess.
A nightmare? Why didn't he call her that instead of Flanders Mare? Well, that gives us 4 out of 4. Now, how about this one from Charles C. Miro of Northfield, Minnesota? Again, get 3 out of 4. This is a trick poetical question, Miss Skinner and gentlemen. I want you to quote the phrase or the line that comes just before the line that I'm going to give you, the one preceding it. She stood in tears amid the alien corn. What comes before it? Mr. Kieran.
Well, of course, that's from Keats' Ode to a Nightingale, the same that oft-time... I have to begin at the beginning of that verse to get
all right.
Down there.
Go ahead.
Where Ruth went sick for home, she stood in tears amid the alien corn.
Yes, that's it exactly. The selfsame song that found a path.
Through the sad heart of Ruth went sick for home, she stood in tears amid the alien corn.
Yes, beautiful lines. And not easy to remember how they work together because it's a long sentence. Now, here's a simpler one. Where the old folks stay. What comes before that, where the old folks stay?
That's Stephen Foster.
Sure it is. Remember what comes before the line? We all know the song.
Oh, well, what's the name of the song? Let's see if you know.
Mr. Adams?
Swanee River?
Way down upon the Swanee River. That's where the old folks stay.
Yes, or that's where my heart is turning over. That's where the old folks stay. Now, how about this one? This, I think you'll recognize, is from Shakespeare.
Turning ever.
Turning ever. What did I say?
Over.
Oh.
But mine's going.
I meant ever. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May. Miss Skinner?
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate.
Yes, very good. It's from...
A sonnet.
From one of the sonnets. I don't know what number. Mr. Keir no doubt does.
I can tell you. I won't be more than one away. I think it's the 15th or 16th.
You care to deny that, Miss Skinner?
I can't read Roman numerals.
Well, we have learned in this business...
I think
business,
it's an X and a V.
We've learned to take Mr. Kieran's word on these things in this program. That gives us 3 out of 3. Now, how about this? His form and face, his manly grace. Mr. Levant.
Oh, Bill, by Kern. I can sing the whole thing.
All right.
Along came Bill, who's not the type at all. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. His form and face. They're out of place.
Ah, yes, but I've got to get the line before his form and face. I'm certain you know the song, but what's the line that comes before his form and face?
Along came Bill. It comes before it, at least 2 sentences.
Ah, but what comes just before it?
Along came Bill, who's not the type at all. I don't know.
You'd meet him on the street and never notice him?
That's right.
His form and face. You really should get almost full credit on that. Anyway, we got 3 out of 4. Thank you. Now, how about this one from Mignon McLaughlin of New York? Now, you're going to hear 3 well-known songs which originated in shows that are perhaps less remembered than the songs are. Just name the shows in which they originally appeared. There are 3 of them. Let's get 2 out of 3. Let's have the first.
Song?
Yes. Now, we've all heard that on the radio several times.
I never heard it.
Oh, yes,
no,
you have.
No.
It's a wonderful song. I think most of us would recollect it.
Never heard
it. It's a long song. Goes on a long time. Want to hear it again? Just the first
time? No, I know what he played.
Well, it's the Ballad for Americans.
It is?
Yes, it is. And it appeared in what show, Mr. Levant?
It appeared in a show, a WPA project.
That's right.
Hattie Flanners or whatever. And
Flanagan, I think. Hallie Flanagan. Yeah. Hallie Flanagan. Was the...
I had a funny title, that show.
Sing for Your Supper.
That's right.
Not so funny. It's, I think, from the nursery rhyme.
If you don't remember it, it's funny.
Well, I think that you should have remembered the melody. We've heard that, on the air a number of times, I think. That gives us 1 wrong. Now let's see if we can do better on the next one. Mr. Levant has that one spotted.
Without a song.
Right.
By Vincent Newman's from Great Day.
From Great Day, yes. How about the third and last? That again.
It's by Cole Porter. That's from Moss Hart Show, Jubilee.
Jubilee is right. And what's the song called?
Begin the Begin.
Yes. It says here the Jubilee closed after 169 performances. Isn't that pretty good, Mr.
Yeah, why did they call that a flop?
I don't know. Shall we declare it a hit?
Well, it was very expensive, that's why.
Oh, that may be it. That gives us 2 out of 3. Now, how about this one from Ralph J. Scanlon of Berkeley, California? What river or other body of water did each of these characters cross or travel over? You heard me say over there, didn't you, Mr. Adams? Mm-hmm. Get 2 out of 3. Eliza, what body of water? Miss Skinner?
Oh, the ice.
The ice, yes. The ice in what body of
the
water?
The Ohio.
The Ohio River. Some people might think it was what river, Mr. Adams? I remember. I always just think of it as Mississippi. Yes, but it isn't.
She went into Kentucky, I think. Or left Kentucky and went someplace else.
Into Ohio.
Yes,
Ohio.
From Kentucky to Ohio. Right. That represented the line between the slave states and the free states at that time. That's right. How about Halliburton? Halliburton. What body of water did Halliburton cross or go through? Mr. Levant.
He got lost in the Alps. I don't know what water that would be up there.
There wouldn't be any water up there at all. Just a few freshets. Mr. Kieran?
I think, among other things, he swam the Hellespont.
Yes, as Byron did.
That's just
other Abydos. People have. He swam along another body of water. This was a very good stunt.
The Lido?
No, the Panama Canal. He swam from ocean to ocean through the Panama Canal.
The pool of the Taj Mahal.
Did he? Well, that would be still another one, Miss Scott.
He got arrested for it.
There are at least 3 bodies of water that Halliburton in his time swam in or over or through. Now, how about Hamlet? Hamlet crossed what body of water? Mr. Kieran?
Well, he set sail for England and got into the ship he was riding on, got into a row with a pirate, and, of course, he escaped and got back to Denmark.
Well, what body of water would all this have happened on?
Well, he probably would have gone down the Skagerrak, is it? And out into the North Sea.
Yeah, the North Sea, yes. In order to get from Denmark to England or even toward England. Mr. Levant, were you going to add something to
it? I was going to say Skagerrak.
Well, you know, it's very hard to say that.
Well, I don't know
whether
it's the Skagrack or the Kattegat, those two point together.
And don't ask me about it, Mr. Kieran. Here's one from George Eckstein of Beverly Hills, California. Get 3 out of 4. Who were the husbands of these famous ladies? Presumably the less famous husbands of these famous ladies. The first is Cleopatra. I had never known before this time that Cleopatra had a husband.
She must have had many.
No, she had one husband, definitely. Do you remember, Miss Skinner?
No.
You don't go back that far.
I don't know.
The husband of Cleopatra was Ptolemy the 12th.
I was going to guess Ptolemy.
And he was also her brother. And when he was 10, she was 17. You'll find all this, I suppose, in the antique chronicles. I had no idea that Cleopatra was married.
Embarrassing to know that right answer.
Pardon? That gives us one wrong. How about Venus? Venus apparently was also married in her spare time. Miss Skinner?
Vulcan.
Vulcan, yes. Do you know how she happened to get married to Vulcan?
I suppose she liked him.
Oh, no, nothing so simple. You've led a very sheltered life, Miss Skinner. Mr. Kieran, do you know the story back of that?
No, I don't remember that.
Well, she was given to Vulcan, who was, of course, the blacksmith. The blacksmith of the time, Mr. Adams, thank you. She was given to him by Jupiter because of Vulcan's service in forging thunderbolts for Jupiter. How about Mary Tudor? Mary Tudor was married to Miss Skinner?
She had 3 husbands. The first was the Dauphin in France. Heavens. He was married a Medici's son.
And you say there were 2 others?
There was Boswell, the Earl of Boswell, and Darnley.
Now, I think you have the wrong Mary.
You have Mary's Queen of Scots.
I think you've got Mary Queen of Scots. Mary Tudor.
Oh, Mary Tudor.
Yeah, it's nice to hear about
Mary. Oh, she was
married
to Philip of Spain.
Philip II of Spain, that's right. How about Carlotta? Carlotta, Mr. Levant?
Maximilian?
Yes, they reigned in what country, Mr.
Mexico.
In Mexico. Yes, during the second Napoleonic era. Now, how about this one? From Catherine Worley of Houston, Texas. Well, this is a one-part question, come to think of it. How many acts would you sit through if you saw all of these plays? You have to total the acts as I read the names of the plays. Are we ready? You ought to be able to do this in your heads. 4 Saints in 3 Acts, which is a play. Macbeth. Waiting for Lefty. And of Thee I Sing. Now, if you had...
I haven't.
Are you sure of that, Mr. Levant?
I'm not sure, but I haven't.
All right, go ahead.
11.
No, not quite.
All right.
What were you going to say, Miss Skinner?
I was going to say 11.
No, it isn't. It's just the same. It's equally wrong. Mr. Adams?
I was going to say 13.
Why?
Because that's how I add.
All right. Now, you're all wrong.
Maybe it's inflation.
I'm going to ask Mr. Adams to explain his sum for me. How did you get 13? The first is 4 Saints and 3 Acts, which is a play by Gertrude Stein.
I think that's 3 acts.
That's where you
That's what I think,
two.
Yes.
It's 2 acts, isn't it?
Now, if you knew Miss Gertrude Stein, you know it could never be 3 acts if she called it 4 Saints and 3 Acts.
Well, that fooled me.
How many acts is that?
It has 4 acts plus a prelude, and that's why it's called having 3 acts. Is that clear?
Well, how many acts?
That's clearer than most of it. Most of Gertrude.
Most of Gertrude. Well,
I saw it last year in 1 act.
In 1 act? You were lucky. No, it has 4. 4 acts. Now, Macbeth has how many acts, Mr. Adams?
4.
5.
5 acts, except in Mr. Maurice Evans' presentation, where I think it's divided into 3 different acts, though he doesn't call them acts. There are, at any rate, only 2 intermissions. And Waiting for Lefty has
1.
How many acts? 1,
one
Mr.
Act.
Levant. And of Thee I Sing, like...
3. 2. 2.
2. 2. Like most musical comedies. Yeah. Mr. Kieran, you're the only one that has the distinction of not having guessed wrong.
The only thing I knew was 5 acts in Macbeth.
Well, that wouldn't have got you very far. 12 would be the correct answer, and that sends $25 of the Encyclopedia Britannica to Miss Worley of Houston, Texas, courtesy of Lucky
wasn't
Strike.
So terrible.
Now, so far, Lucky Strike has paid out $25 in 1 set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, and Mr. Cross, unlike Mr. Einstein, comes up with a theory of relativity that everyone can understand.
Well, my theory, ladies and gentlemen, has to do with cigarettes, and it's simply this. The amount of enjoyment you get out of a cigarette is related directly to the kind of tobacco it contains. The better the tobacco, the better the cigarette. Yes, to put this universal rule into a nutshell, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. That's why the makers of Lucky's consistently pay the price to get the finer, milder, better-tasting tobacco. For example, so far this season, according to latest reports, at Mebane, North Carolina, the American Tobacco Company has paid 26% more for tobacco. Yes, 26% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we buy goes into Lucky's. So it goes at market after market all over the South. The result is that Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Mr. Fadiman, isn't that fact reason enough for every smoker to try Lucky's and find out for himself?
Mr. Cross, you've made it seem definitely worthwhile, and in just 59 seconds. And now how about this question from Jeanette Westerfield of the American Women's Voluntary Services, New York. Get 3 out of 4 on this. What woman replaced her husband under the following circumstances? What woman replaced her husband on the battlefield? Miss Skinner.
Molly Pitcher.
Molly Pitcher, yes, the famous American story. Now, how about a woman who replaced her husband in the political world? Mr. Kieran.
Nellie Taylor Ross is governor.
Yes, that is she. Was she director of the Mint?
Well, she was. Her husband was governor, and she replaced him.
What state was it?
Well, one of the western states.
Wyoming.
Wyoming, I think that's right. There, I can think of two more.
Hattie Carraway.
Carraway.
Yes.
Arkansas.
And another one.
One in Texas, a governor.
Ma Ferguson, Marcus, wasn't it,
yeah.
I think? How about a woman who replaced her husband in the scientific world? Miss Skinner.
Madame Curie.
Yes. Really, she didn't replace him because she'd already won a reputation for herself before his death.
They collaborated, I think.
They collaborated, and she continued with his work after his death. What woman replaced her husband as an owner in the sporting field? Mr. Levant.
Mrs. Comiskey in Chicago.
Yes, of the White Sox. That's right. Mm-hmm. And apparently all these gals did pretty well. How about this one from Mrs. J. Glass of Miami Springs, Florida? Get 2 out of 3. Who was sentenced to these unusual punishments? Now, in the first case, this gentleman was made to push a stone up a hill, only to have it roll back again when it almost reached the top. Mr. Adams.
Sisyphus.
Sisyphus, yes. And do you know why Sisyphus was so punished?
I've forgotten that.
By the way, from where do we get this story from? In what period did it take place, Mr. Adams? Who was Sisyphus? Lived when, Miss Skinner?
Well, he was one of the soul in Greek mythology. It was he was one of the persons in the nether world.
Well, it was
being
in the in primitive Greek mythology, and his crime.
Hades is what I'm trying to
say. That's right. His crime was being disobedient to Zeus. Just how the disobedience showed itself, I don't remember. Now, who was sentenced to? They were condemned to speak in strange tongues. Miss Skinner?
Well, the people who were building the Tower of Babel.
Yes. Why was that? Remember why they were
because
so punished?
Because they boasted that they could build such a high tower that would reach heaven, wasn't it?
Yes, that's it.
It's vanity.
It's the sin of pride.
Yeah.
The same one for which Lucifer was thrown out of paradise. And what one was sentenced to have his teeth extracted by terrified amateurs? Mr. Adams?
Somebody in the Mikado. Oh, by terrified amateurs?
Yes.
Teeth?
I
don't
said
know.
Teeth.
No, no.
Well, now, why did you go all through that? Mr. Adams, you know perfectly well because you were right at the beginning. You just talked yourself out of the answer to this question. The Mikado is right. Mr. Levant? Do you remember any of you? Remember?
I thought the farmer takes a wife, but there was no sentence involved there.
No. No, it's a famous chorus from the Mikado. The advertising quack who wearies with tales of countless cures, his teeth I've enacted shall all be extracted by terrified amateurs. Now, Mr. Adams, does that come back to you?
Oh, yes. I thought it was something about billiard balls there.
that's one
elliptical
wrong.
Billiard balls.
Yes, I know, but that's in another stanza. That's 2 out of 3, which I think passes us. How about this one from Mary S. Manning of Westfield, New Jersey? I want you to supply the furnishings of a house for us with well-known figures of speech. For example, you might have a bed of roses. Mm-hmm. Not for long. Let us have at least 4 of them. Mr. Kieran?
You might have a shape like a hat rack.
Who might?
You might.
a shape like a hat... Well, a shape is not a furnishing, is it?
No, but a hat rack is.
Oh, yes, I get it. Shape like a hat rack. It's not exactly a figure of speech. How about another, Mr. Levant?
The hot seat.
The hot seat, yes. It gives us a seat. Miss Skinner?
A screen of smoke.
Yes, a screen of smoke might be very good, Mr. Levant.
Stool pigeon.
Stool pigeon, yes. Got seat and stool. Mr. Adams?
Everything but the kitchen stove.
Yes, or sink. Mm. That gives us a stove, Mr. Kieran.
Well, you've made your bed, now you must lie in it.
Yes, that's a very good one. Magic carpet would be still another. We have 4. Can you think of any others?
Snug as a bug in a rug.
Snug as a bug in a rug gives us rugs. Yes. Oh, pillar of society, potluck.
And you have the floor.
Pardon?
You have the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Adams. How about this one from Gloria Brody of New York City? Get 3 out of 4. Name the famous actress who impersonated these male figures on the stage. Who impersonated L'Aiglon? Miss Skinner?
Sarah Bernhardt.
Yes, who was L'Aiglon?
L'Aiglon was the son of Napoleon.
Yes, the little...
The little boy who died in...
Yes, called the King of Rome,
yes.
Wasn't he? Mr. Adams?
I think perhaps also Maud Adams.
I wouldn't know.
Yes, she did.
Is that right,
Miss Skinner? Who originated it.
Yes. Eva Le Gallien, I believe,
did a revival. Eva Le Gallien.
Yes, not so long ago. But the famous role, of course, was enacted by Sarah Bernhardt. Now, how about Hilde Johnson? Hilde Johnson. Mr. Levant.
Osgood Perkins.
I said an actress.
What? Oh, Rosalind Russell.
That's right.
I can't get my sexes straight in pictures.
How did it happen that Rosalind Russell portrayed this?
Because they had previously done the picture, Hilde Johnson being a man, and as an angle, they switch it to a woman.
Yeah, that's big stuff, isn't it, over there in Hollywood? What was the picture called?
Front Page. Not the picture, though.
The picture was called My Girl Friday.
Is that all it was?
My Girl Friday. Now, how about the role of La Jongleur de Notre Dame? Miss Skinner?
Mary Garden.
Mary Garden, yes. Not a play, of course.
That was an opera.
An opera. Who wrote it? Wrote the music for it.
I don't know.
Mr. Levant?
It must have been either Massenet or somebody else.
Yes, it was Massenet. I think somebody else was just an understudy. How about Macduff? Macduff. Who impersonated Macduff? Miss Skinner?
If I had a guess, I'd say Charlotte Cushman.
Gee, I wouldn't know. I don't think so.
She
but I think you should know the answer to this because... You played along with the Macduff in this play.
Anne Harding, when I was in school, played with me.
That's right. Where was that, Miss Adams?
At Bryn Mawr.
How do you know, Mr. Adams?
Because she told me just a little while ago.
Oh, I was wondering what you... I was wondering how you happened to be in Bryn Mawr at the time, Mr. Adams. Yes, Anne Harding in a production of Macbeth. And, Miss Skinner, I believe you played what role yourself?
I played Lady Macbeth.
How were you? Lady Macbeth? Yes. I understood that you played Macbeth.
No.
Who played Macbeth?
My roommate.
Has she since become famous by any chance?
She's a mother of about 8 children.
Well, that
lives in Toronto.
Thank you very much. That gives us 4 out of 4. How about this one? This is about famous assassins of history. Comes from E.D. Erger of Brooklyn, New York. Get 2 out of 3. How do these assassins affect the course of history? The first is Charlotte Corday. Mr. Kieran.
She stabbed one of the leading French revolutionists in the bath. Let's see, was it Robespierre or Marat?
Which one?
The second.
Marat. The second is right. It was Marat. Mm-hmm. Yes, and what was the importance of that famous murder? What did it release or help to release historically?
Well, it cut down the leaders of that revolutionary party were fighting among themselves, the Girondists and the Mountainists, as they call them, and she destroyed the leader of one of those bands.
Yes, one of the extreme leftists. And it was a factor in starting the Reign of Terror. Right after that, the Reign of Terror broke out with renewed violence. How about Casca? That's C-A-S-C-A. Casca. Mr. Adams?
You mean the envious Casca?
I think the same one, yes. E. Casca. Whom did he murder?
Julius Caesar.
Yes, and what was the importance of that murder?
Well,
historically.
What
happened after the murder, Mr.
He made
Kieran?
A rent.
Why, they founded the first triumvirate there. Augustus Caesar finally came out of that with Lepidus and Antony, and Augustus Caesar became the first of the great Roman emperors.
Yes, it led to the establishment of the Roman Empire after the Civil War. And how about Gavrilo Princip, Mr. Levant?
He was the man at Sarajevo, or whatever it is. He assassinated Ferdinand, the Archduke of Austria-Hungary.
Yes, and that
1914.
Was the signal for the war on June 28th, 1914. Now, how about this one from John Baldwin of Morristown, New Jersey? Get 2 out of 3. This is about people who saved other people. Who saved another by sacrificing himself? Who saved another by sacrificing himself, Miss Skinner?
In Dickens' Tale of Two Cities.
You're right.
What is his name?
Mr. Kieran?
Ronald Coleman.
Sidney Carton.
Sidney Carton.
That's how Mr. Levant remembers him. Mr. Kieran?
Sidney Carton.
Yes, saved Charles Darnay, whom he resembled, of course. That's right. We'll give you full credit on that, Mr. Skinner. Now, who saved a young girl who had eaten poisoned food? Who saved a young girl who had eaten poisoned food?
That happens every day.
That's in Alice in Wonderland.
I don't remember it.
Is it?
No. Is it? We can't keep this up forever, Mr. Kieran.
No.
I think you all saw the picture based on the story in which that incident occurred. It's in Snow White. Remember the princess swallowed the poison apple, and in one story they lifted the glass coffin, the servants of the prince did, and they stumbled and the apple was forced from her throat. That gives us one wrong. Now, who saved a man from being killed by her own people? A woman who saved a man. Miss Skinner?
Pocahontas.
Pocahontas. Saved whom?
Saved Captain John Cave Smith.
Saved Captain John Smith, according to the story. Well, I think that's about all we'll have time for. And now we find Mr. Cross in a rare mood, one of amazement.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is amazing how much interest has been created by our recent comments about advertising on this program. Many listeners have written personal letters, chambers of commerce have made inquiries, and at least a dozen people have stopped me to say, in effect, Mr. Cross, you certainly told me something about advertising I never knew before. You see, we evidently upset lots of pet notions when we pointed out that if Lucky Strike stopped all radio, magazine, and newspaper ads, if your Luckies came from the factory straight to your cigarette counter without a word or breath of advertising, the price you pay for a package of Luckies would not be reduced one iota. For the total cost of all our advertising is such a small fraction of a cent per package that even if it were entirely eliminated, the saving per package could not be passed on to you. For remember, smokers, advertising is not what you pay for when you buy Luckies. The makers of Luckies have always believed that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. The tobacco, not the advertising. And we pay what it costs to get the milder, better-tasting tobacco for Luckies. For instance, 23% more than the market average at Carthage, Tennessee last season. 30% more at Oxford, North Carolina. And so on all over the South. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Why not make your next package Luckies and prove to yourself that it's the tobacco that counts?
Thank you, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out only $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you, Miss Skinner, for joining us tonight. Next week, our terrific trio, Adams, Kieran, and Levant, will be on hand again. And as our special guests, we're glad to welcome the crack Washington colonists who are authors of Washington Merry-Go-Round and who work as a team for the New York Daily Mirror and who are going to work as a team for us on Information Please next week, Mr. Drew Pearson and Mr. Robert Allen.